behavior, you know, bothering you, causing problem for you. In that case, again, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala emphasized on the point that you should have nice reaction, and it's considered to be kind of reaction toward their behavior.
Okay, thank you. Jazakallah khair. So, in case they invite us to another religion or they don't want us to practice Islam, so we are not allowed to follow them. And in case, again, they constantly are having bad behavior with us, then again, it is recommended. And Islam wants us to be more tolerant, and to actually to react them with nice behavior. So the question was, Sheikhuna, sometimes this bad behavior from their side has no stop, and then we cannot tolerate more than... We have a sort of limited capacity. We cannot tolerate more. What do you recommend for those youngsters that are facing with such problems?
You know, we cannot react towards our parents, okay, and doing some negative action toward the parent. It is not allowed, for example, to hit the parent or to have some kind of, you know, swearing at them or to be rude to our parents. We cannot do that.
True.
In any case, we cannot do that. It mm-hmm. has been explicitly mentioned in the verse of Noble Quran and the narration that we are not allowed to do that, even if our parents have a, you know, worst action toward us.
True.
Because the status of parents is quite different from anybody else.
Yeah.
And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you know, he asked us to have the best behavior toward our parent, even if they have the worst.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Because, as I said, the status and the position of parents are quite different from anybody else. You see that how beautifully Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said that وَخْفِضْ لَهُمَا جَنَاهَ الدُّلِّ مِنَ الرَّحْمَةِ to have the nicest behavior toward your parent, to shower your parent with your blessing and with your mercy. Yeah.
To an extent that they are behaving you bad, but this is your duty to be good in response.
Of course, sometimes you can advise them very friendly, very nicely, you know, very politely to advise them, to ask them to, for example, stop doing that action. Or you can, do kinds of advice and to have any kind of thing that you see suitable in that case.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, we are not allowed to cause any problem for them, to cause any bothering for them, or to be disrespectful to our parents.
Thank you very much, dear Sheikh, for your explanations and your respected listeners for staying tuned. We have been talking about our duties in front of our parents, even if they are behaving us in a bad manner, and sometimes some parents, God forbid, are bad tempered. So our duty, based on Islamic perspective, is to be good with them and nice and react nicely to them. And so Islam wants us to be very nice and well behaved in front of our parents. And in case they want us to stop practicing our religion, that is Islam, then the duty differs, and we just don't need to follow them in this certain issue, not any more than that, not anything more than that. So we just not allowed to follow them in the issues about religion when they want us to stop practicing our religion. But in any other cases, we have been taught and we have been recommended to be nice to them. So this is our first and foremost duty from an Islamic perspective. Till our next show, I live in Allah's protection. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Aliyin wa Husayn wa Hasan. لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن.
يوسف جلالي بتهران
روباشافت غازا
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Puraza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
After months of suspension, Afghan public universities have reopened. We visited Kabul University and spoke with a number of teachers and students. They say they are happy returning to the campus and hope good educational days are ahead.
We are very happy that we have returned to university again. We have been away from our classes and lessons for almost 7 months. I was longing for this day so much. This new beginning and opportunity can motivate us and give more hope for the future.
It is a big day for the young generation. The opening of the doors of universities could open the doors of developments. I hope this process continues well. I urge the international community to help our higher education sector and poor families so that their sons and daughters can get education.
Male and female students are returning to Kabul University, but in different shifts. Moreover, new roles and changes are brought by the new directors.
Actually, I witnessed a lot of changes in Kabul University. First, some departments in the fine art faculty like cinema, music, and theater are said to be cancelled. Secondly, students are obliged to change their outfits. Girls should come in the morning and boys in the afternoon. In addition, we didn't find most of our former teachers and there were new figures.
Some experts say it's not all about reopening, and there are many challenges left on the way of higher education in Afghanistan.
A huge number of our scholars, professors, and lecturers left our country during the government change. This has caused a significant loss in our higher education institutions. We need them back now. Furthermore, the Taliban government are going to make changes in universities' educational syllabuses and staff. It's uncertain where the Taliban are leading our higher education.
Like most public universities, Kabul University had closed in the immediate aftermath of the Taliban takeover. Formerly, the university had remained shut for some months due to COVID-19 pandemic. The reopening of universities have brought hope to the younger generation in Afghanistan. The students here say this process must be supported in advance so that they can continue their education this year successfully. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Iran's parliament is reviewing the details of the budget bill for the next fiscal year, starting on March 21st. The government's proposed budget stands at roughly $148 billion, some 4% higher than last year's approved budget. Lawmakers have earlier approved the generalities of the budget bill, and it's been a week now since the thorough examination of the bill kicked off in parliament's open sessions.
The government's cap on next year's budget is roughly $148 billion. Out of this figure, $60 billion is allocated for the general budget and $88 billion is earmarked for government spending. Parliament is making some revisions, especially in national development projects and infrastructure. We increased the allocated budget in these areas.
This time, the budget's examination process took longer due to the fact that lawmakers want to be as meticulous as possible while evaluating the income and spending in the country.
While Iran and the P4 Plus One are engaged in tough negotiations in Vienna over the revival of the 2015 deal, President Ebrahim Raisi says the budget bill seeks to promote a resistance economy that would not need to wait for the removal of U.S. sanctions.
Parliament says the budget bill was drawn up based on a no-deal possibility in the Vienna talks and the continuation of U.S. sanctions on Iran.
The proposed budget expects the country's oil sales to reach 1.2 million barrels per day, with $60 a barrel, which would earn Iran some $14 billion in the fiscal year 2022-23. Lawmakers reset this figure to 1.4 million BPDs, with $70 a barrel. Any agreement in the ongoing Vienna talks will immediately push Iran's oil sales up by at least 500,000 BPDs as a result of the removal of U.S. oil embargoes on Iran. But lawmakers say they will not wait for the fate of the negotiations to finalize the budget bill, saying any extra petrodollar will be spent for the good of the people.
We cannot waste our time and wait if the U.S. removes the sanctions or not. So we set the budget based on a daily export of 1.4 million barrels of oil through direct or barter sales and based on assumptions that oil prices will hover around $70 when in fact the prices are reaching $100. Any extra oil income will be saved in the National Development Fund.
President Ebrahim Raisi submitted the budget bill to Parliament in mid-December last year when Parliament approved its general outlines. Lawmakers now have 3 weeks to go over the details and fix the shortcomings of the budget to pass it into law before handing it to the higher legislative body, the Constitutional Council, for final approval. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
EU foreign affairs ministers held talks in Brussels to bolster the 27-nation bloc's second round of new sanctions against Russia over the Kremlin's military campaign in Ukraine.
Only leaders in the world who are sanctioned by the European Union, Assad from Syria, Lukashenko from Belarus, and now Putin from Russia.
Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has also been added to the sanctions list. The idea is to block banks in the EU from making funds available to the two key Russian figures. Earlier on Friday, EU leaders agreed sanctions on Russia's energy, aviation and financial sectors.
We're now targeting 70% of the Russian banking market, but also key state-owned companies, including the field of defence.
Outside the EU Leaders' Summit, union members staged a peace demonstration.
We don't think to have a war in Ukraine is a good thing for European workers and for Ukrainian workers. So we don't agree with the war.
Leaders from the 30-country NATO alliance held a summit on Friday. The big question is, could moves by the West stoke the flames and turn this crisis into a catastrophe?
NATO allies have and continue to provide support, military, but also different types of equipment to Ukraine.
US troops under the NATO flag have just arrived in Estonia, Latvia and Lithuania. Moscow had requested less provocation from NATO, but it appears those calls continue to fall on deaf ears. According to some analysts, one positive fallout from the crisis could be greater independence for the EU when it comes to foreign policy. The point has been made, there will be a realisation in the coming months. It is dangerous and extremely costly economically to allow Washington dictate relations between neighbours on the other side of the Atlantic. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
To tea break young girls working at the Central Market in the heart of New Delhi. They say things have changed significantly since the December 2012 gang rape. Now the streets of Delhi are safer for women, as we can see the change. But more needs to be done, considering the population of the city. These working girls are excited to see the new pink booth launched by the Delhi police to make the city safer for girls and women.
Women are more secure nowadays. Police helpline number we are given, and I think last week they have opened several police booth, pink police booth in local market near places where we can directly complain women have.
Although the initiative started a week ago, the drive is gaining a gradual popularity across the city. The booths are staffed with all women police officers filing complaints on the spot, mainly in the crowded markets, besides helping female commuters with any sort of problems they face while shopping. The initiative has received an overwhelming response from citizens, especially on the social media. Now calls are growing across the country for similar booths for women and girls in distress, since the office provides them with the on-spot help. Indian women live in a constant barrage of threats, ranging from rape, torture, abduction, stalking, domestic violence, dowry deaths, and other forms of violence. The administration in recent years adopted a string of stringent measures as a result of large-scale reporting of crime against women. Experts say while violence against women in India is a deep-rooted social problem, there is a need for cultural change. Many are hopeful things are changing in a good direction. With a drive like the Pink Booth, women will get more sense of safety and security.
This is an iconic spot, India Gate. Here people from across the country and from abroad come to visit. We provide women and girls with all help and support. In case they face any troubles, their complaints are filled on spot rather than going to the police station.
New Delhi, which the media usually dubs one of the most unsafe cities for women, has seen a 21% rise in crime against women compared to the last year. Based on the city police, the rise is the result of a conscious policy of fear and truthful registration of complaints. Now, with the Pink Booth arrival at bustling markets, the Delhi police is confident to provide a safe complaint mechanism, besides hoping for it to be a success story. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
As missiles fell on Ukrainian cities, so did international condemnation rain down on Russia's attack on Ukraine. NATO's Secretary General reiterated the alliance's support of Ukraine.
We condemn Russia's aggressions in the strongest possible terms and call on Russia to immediately cease its military action.
A day earlier, EU leaders discussed developments the scale of which none of them would entirely have foreseen.
From their national capitals, leader after leader promised a coordinated and unprecedented sanctions response aimed at President Putin, the Russian elite, and the sources and havens of Russian wealth, the city of London being one of them.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson set diplomatic niceties aside, describing Vladimir Putin as a dictator before outlining a raft of punitive measures.
We'll be imposing asset freezes on more than 100 new entities and individuals, on top of the hundreds that we've already announced. This includes all the major manufacturers that support Putin's war machine. Furthermore, we are also banning Aeroflot from the UK.
Economic warfare at the expense of negotiation as a means of ending the Ukraine crisis.
Present government or the present arrangement in Ukraine was installed in 2014, 8 years ago. So there's been 8 years of diplomacy, 8 years of opportunities to fix these very serious problems of the national question in Ukraine and of Russian national security. And the only reason we haven't seen those happening is because of the total intransigence of the US and its allies in London, in Berlin, and in Kiev.
And while the West blames Russia for triggering the crisis, others such as Iran and China say the reason behind it should be sought elsewhere.
The US administration, the German administration had assured, given assurances to the Soviets back in 1989, back in 1990, when the two sides were renegotiating the reunification of Germany, that NATO would not expand. You know, the famous quote is, NATO will not expand even 1 inch eastwards of Germany. 30 years later, 14 countries in Eastern and Central Europe have been incorporated into NATO, including countries like Estonia, which share a border with Russia.
The war in Ukraine is ongoing. NATO member Poland says it has opened 9 reception points along Ukraine's border to receive an expected wave of refugees. Another outcome of US-led NATO's adventurism. Saeed Puriza, London.
The Omicron variant exploded in South Korea this week, with new daily cases increasing 50% to 170,000 per day.
South Korea's surge in the Omicron variant of COVID-19 comes as other countries with declining cases relax lockdown measures. So despite the increase in new cases of the Omicron variant here in South Korea, the government's under increasing pressure to end social distancing restrictions and open up social and economic activity. Small business people suffering from limits in hours and capacity have rallied for an end to the restrictions. The school year begins next week. Many believe classes should go ahead in person.
Insisting on virtual classes is not realistic because we don't know when the COVID-19 pandemic will end. So the government's decision looks reasonable to me, as long as there are proper measures like vaccines for the children to minimize the risk.
Some parents' group protested against vaccine mandates for teenagers amid reports of a handful of deaths attributed to vaccinations. Doctors maintain the public health benefits of getting the jab, including resuming in-person classes at school.
For students, offline, in-person class is very important, especially for the youngest. But the danger of infection is still there, and a child's infection leads to the whole family's infection. So it's better to start with offline classes until enough of the 5 to 11-year-old age group has been vaccinated.
South Korea's medical authorities this week approved the Pfizer vaccine for young children. Frank Smith, Seoul.
In what seems to be a hefty catch, the Lebanese Internal Security Forces have thwarted a plan by Daesh terrorists to carry out three suicide bombings targeting religious compounds in Beirut's southern suburbs. Interior Minister Bassam al-Maulawi told reporters that had this terrorist plot not been stopped, it would have taken Lebanon to a very dangerous situation.
A Takfiri terrorist group recruited young Palestinian men in Lebanon to carry out major bombing attacks using explosive belts and using explosives which contain rocket missiles.
Lebanon's internal security forces said the instructions for the bomb plot came from a Daesh operative based in the Palestinian refugee camp of Ain al-Helwi, who is in touch with extremists in Syria. The terrorist operative was given explosive vests and other weapons to prepare for simultaneous attacks on three religious compounds in the southern suburbs of Beirut. This is reminiscent to a wave of attacks in the Beirut suburbs between 2013 and 2014. The instructions were passed to an undercover Internal Security Forces agent who had successfully managed to infiltrate Daesh networks in Lebanon. Observers see that Daesh has lost initiative in Lebanon, Syria and Iraq and is trying to gain ground.
I think that ISIS is now trying to implement a qualitative operation attack in Lebanon after the death of his leader al-Qurashi in 3 February in Syria, because he lost initiative in Lebanon, in Syria, and in Iraq.
Daesh is seemingly taking advantage of a deep financial crisis in Lebanon to attract recruits, promising them high salaries.
ISIS didn't stop trying to get inside the Lebanese society when he succeeded in to send many young men from Tripoli to Iraq. More than 49 young men have been sent to Iraq. 9 of them have been killed, targeted by the Iraqis just 3 weeks ago. And now the information about a Palestinian cell in the Palestinian camp in Lebanon.
Al-Maulawi uncovered that the ministry and the security apparatus are monitoring the movement of Lebanese leaving the northern city of Tripoli to join the terrorist group and have opened talks with Iraqi authorities on this threat. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Hundreds of Afghan youths and sportsmen rallied against the U.S. in Kabul. The rally is part of massive anti-U.S. sentiments underway in the country over the recent decision by the American president to give some parts of the Afghans' national assets to the victims of the 9/11 attacks. "We want all of our money. Biden is a thief. Death to America." These are the slogans that the protesters chanted as they were holding anti-U.S. placards.
These sportsmen call on the U.S. to reverse its decision and free all of their money. They say freezing Afghanistan's assets has harmed all aspects of the Afghan society.
We have gathered here on behalf of all Afghan youths and sportsmen to condemn the U.S. president's decision to give half of our frozen assets to Americans. Of course, this decision is crazy and unjust. The U.S.'s move has affected all Afghans' lives. Our athletes and sportsmen are quitting their sports due to economic difficulties.
The angry protesters also say that if the U.S. does not reverse its unjust and immoral decision, their protests will escalate.
The U.S. considers itself as one of the richest countries, but now it's shamelessly stealing from the poorest people of the world. We call on the U.S. to free all of our frozen assets and stop punishing and torturing Afghans. Our demonstrations will continue until we reach our rights.
Staging in front of the U.N. office in Kabul, the protesters called on the UN and World Bank donors not to stay silent against the US operations and stay by Afghans' side.
Afghans were not involved in 9/11 attack. This was crystal clear to the world countries. So why should the US seek revenge from us? In addition, today Afghans are dealing with many economic and health crises. We urge the international community to make the U.S. reconsider its decision and let the flow of aid to our vulnerable people.
Last week, the U.S. president signed an order allowing half of $7 billion in Afghan frozen assets to be given to 9/11 victims. The move has sparked outrage in Afghanistan and was massively denounced. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Under a sea of red flags, the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine, DFLP, held a big protest to mark its 53rd anniversary and support Al-Quds. People thronged the streets of Gaza City to take part in the event. Protesters shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and vowed to stand with Al-Quds. Tensions heightened across the Palestinian territories in mid-February when Israeli forces and illegal settlers renewed their attacks against Palestinians in Al-Quds' Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood.
53 years on, the DFLP continues to hold sacred the liberation of Al-Quds and the right of return. And we will call on all Palestinians to protect Sheikh Jarrah.
The Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine refuses to recognize the Israeli regime and maintains armed resistance as the only way to end the Israeli occupation.
Resistance is the best way to liberate Al-Quds, and we say to our people in Sheikh Jarrah that we always support them. We are willing to sacrifice our lives for the sake of defending Al-Quds and all of Palestine against the Zionist enemy.
DFLP activists called on all Palestinian factions to increase armed resistance against the Israeli regime and its forces. Protesters also slammed Arab countries in the Persian Gulf region for normalizing their relations with Tel Aviv.
All those countries who normalize their ties with Israel are stabbing the Palestinian people in the back and hurting our cause. Israel is using normalization as a pretext to increase its violations in Al-Quds.
Palestinians stress that Al-Quds will always remain the capital of Palestine despite the U.S. and Israeli plots to change its status.
As they mark the 53rd anniversary of the DFLP, Palestinians in Gaza say they will continue to resist the Israeli occupation until the liberation of Al-Quds. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Rejecting pressure to terminate the program in its entirety,
The Biden administration has recently announced it is redesigning a Trump-era experiment that physicians and progressive lawmakers have criticized as a scheme to fully privatize Medicare. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Jake Johnson, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Critics Blast Biden, Rebrand of Trump's Medicare Privatization Scheme. This is the story. Rejecting pressure to terminate the program in its entirety, the Biden administration has recently announced it is redesigning a Trump-era experiment that physicians and progressive lawmakers have criticized as a scheme to fully privatize Medicare. Instead of ending what's known as the direct contracting model, which the Trump administration officially launched in 2020, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, gave the program a new name, ACO REACH, which stands for Accountable Care Organization Realizing Equity Access and Community Health. In addition to the name change and fresh veneer, a step in line with the healthcare industry's call for a rebranding, CMS said the program will now span 4 years instead of eight and will include requirements aimed at ensuring transparency and equity. The changes are slated to take effect on January 1, 2023. Physicians for a National Health Program, PNHP, a doctor-led group that has spearheaded the opposition to direct contracting, was far from satisfied with the Biden administration's changes, which the organization argued are more cosmetic than substantive. Dr. Susan Rogers, an internal medicine physician and president of PNHP, said ACO REACH is direct contracting in disguise. This new model doubles down on direct contracting fatal flaws, inserting a profit-seeking middleman between beneficiaries and their providers. Under direct contracting, so-called direct contracting entities were paid monthly by CMS to cover a specified portion of a patient's medical care. DCs, the majority of which are currently controlled by investors, not healthcare providers, are allowed to pocket funds they didn't spend on care. In a statement, PNHP, which has implored the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, to fully halt the program, outlined how the revamped pilot perpetuates the dangerous flaws of the Trump administration's direct contracting experiment. First, like the DC model, ACO REACH will pay middlemen a flat fee to manage seniors' health, allowing them to keep 40% of what they don't spend on care as profit and overhead. Next, traditional Medicare beneficiaries will still be automatically enrolled into ACO REACH entities without their full understanding or consent, and once enrolled cannot opt out of an ACO REACH entity unless they change primary care providers. Like DCs, the ACO REACH program has virtually no limits on what type of company can participate. Entities can be owned by commercial insurers, private equity investors, and other profit-seeking firms, including current direct contracting entities. The new program increases provider governance from 25% to 75% with loopholes built into application process, but ACO REACH entities are ultimately accountable to investors. You can't slap a Band-Aid on a tumor and call it cured, said Rogers. Direct contracting and now ACO-rich threatens the health of beneficiaries and the future of traditional Medicare. As physicians committed to the health of our patients, we urge HHS to abandon this rebranding effort and focus the agency's efforts towards strengthening and protecting traditional Medicare. CMS unveiled its raft of changes to the Medicare experiment just over a week after a coalition of industry groups, including active participants in the direct contracting program, requested that the Biden administration fix the model instead of ending it. The industry organization suggested that a rebranding and name change would help communicate how this model is part of the evolution to accountable care. CMS is headed by Elizabeth Fowler, who has previously worked at WellPoint Incorporation, now known as Anthem, one of the largest private health insurance companies in the United States. While CMS said recently that it took into account feedback received from participants and stakeholders, the new ACO REACH program is more in line with industry demands than those of physicians, grassroots advocacy groups, and progressive lawmakers. Changing the name doesn't change the fact that the direct contracting program is backdoor privatization of Medicare, Alex Lawson, executive director of Social Security Works, said in a statement, adding, "This dangerous experiment must be stopped before it further harms the health of vulnerable seniors, eats into Medicare Trust Fund, and destroys traditional Medicare." Lawson added DCs and their investors, which include private equity firms, are focused on generating profits. They are incentivized to deny and delay care as much as possible. There are no changes that can address that fundamental flaw at the heart of the program. President Biden must protect older adults and people with disabilities by ending the direct contracting program immediately. Representative Pramila Jayapal, who earlier this month led more than 50 House Democrats in urging Biden to cut off the program, said recently that she will continue to fight tooth and nail against any and all efforts to privatize Medicare. Trump-era direct contracting is a major threat to Medicare coverage hidden in bureaucracy, said Jayapal, the chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. While I'm glad to see the administration taking steps to redesign this flawed program, I'm disappointed that these changes will not be enacted for 10 months and that there are no limits on how many seniors are funneled into this experimental model. More needs to be done.
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, boys and girls, and other life forms, you are listening to Youth Station, brought to you by RRB English Radio. There are many other opening alternatives to this, but no, that's not my job. Anyway, today I have the honor of being joined by my brother in faith and humanity, Brother Abdullah. Salaamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you so very much for being with us, sir. What makes a role model, really?
What makes a role model a role model is what he stands for.
What do you mean?
Why do we love the Justice League?
Why do we love the Justice League? You know, the thing about the Justice League is that, or the Avengers, or all these superheroes that we have, is that they have been, to a great extent, I personally feel, pushed. They are being pushed
under the notion that they stand for something that me and you relate to, which is...
They stand for being cool.
No, beside that. That's what I'm trying to get. First is what they stand for, which is to save humanity, to save life, to create justice on earth, to create better life for people, to save people. That's what they do. That's the core value that they stand for. They get pushed into me and you by giving them the extra values.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. See, here's the thing about the Justice League. When I think about it, not just the Justice League, that's just this whole superhero concept that the West is so, well, not actually the West. We have it in almost every culture. They are so keen on having people celebrate is that, you know, like the likes of Justice League, sure, when there's an alien invasion of planet Earth, you see them practicing their superpowers and kicking tush and, you know, creating so much more carnage through this process.
Yeah, yeah,
like totally sure. Raising New York City to the ground. But like when there's a mother and her child starving in the back alleys of Brooklyn or the Bronx because, you know, she can't keep up with rent, where's the justice in that? You know, it's the Justice League is not at all.
I'm not saying they are.
A logical.
Exactly. I agree with you
but
100%.
It is so accepted and celebrated because Hollywood especially has done such a great job at pushing it down consumers' throats.
Exactly. I'm saying it's now, but I'm trying to say is that even Hollywood or any other media outlet, when they want to present something to you, regardless of what's actually happening in the actual world, mm-hmm. is they try to give you a core value that you could relate to, right? Now, when it's human invasion, yes, true. Okay, you know, our problem are the aliens, and we don't care. Even if thousands of people get killed in the process, we don't care as long as we get to save Earth. So, yes, so that's a value. So what makes them heroes and what makes role models is what they believe in, right? And we could relate to that to some extent. Obviously, and me and you, because we understand this concept, so we don't go towards that 100%. As for us, when we want to take a role model in, is we have to look at what they believe in and what they stand for is what makes them role model. And then when I use the Avengers or the Justice League, they are just example. But across out every culture, they would have a character or characters what they could relate to them and they are their role models. Why? Because they stood for a core principle or a value. And then, you know, people start to look at that person and try to celebrate his life. And, you know, some of these characters turn into religions. They turn into gods like Confucianism or like Buddhism. They turn into gods because of their core values. When we look at the Ahl Bayt alayhi salam, and specifically Ali al-Akbar alayhi salam, because he's a role model for the youth, first, we have to see what Ali al-Akbar alayhi salam stood for. What is his core value in life that I and you could relate to? And then we look at his actions. What did he do as a human being, as a person in his life that I can do as well? And with the Ahl Bayt alayhi salam and the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, all the prophets, the beauty about them, they don't have anything attached to them in the sense that segregate them from the rest of the world. Oh, he's just my imam. He's only for the Shia, he's only for the Muslim. No one could relate to him.
Okay. This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
What makes a role model a role model is what he stands for, But when we look at Amir al-Mu'mineen, if I take him as an example, the justice of Ali alayhi salam was applied to everyone during his time when he was the Khalifa of his time. Whether you're a Christian or you're a Jew, you're old or young, everyone got their right equally. When Talha and Zubair came to him, one wanted Basra and one wanted Kufa as to be governed, and she said to him, based on what? Mm. Or those who said, I want extra money because I am Qurayshi, how could you equalize me to a Persian? I mean, I said, last time I checked, everybody was from earth, yeah. And Adam was from dust. Mm-hmm. So why should I? So the justice here was applied to every human being. When people come to the Ahlul Bayt, they come to them as mutual characters to the entire earth. Any human being would relate to them. Anyone that comes in contact with them, they will get something from them. Even, they have been blessed to have the languages of all languages that mankind deal with. So the Imam would speak, a person comes to Imam Sadiq from Persia, he wanted to speak with the Imam in Arabic. The Imam preceded him by speaking with him in Persian. Mm-hmm. Just to, tell him, I know what you're saying. You don't have to trouble yourself. Mm-hmm. So they could relate to everyone. So their character, sometimes we have characters, when you look at them, they are limited to a space and time. You can't take them out. He can't give them to the entire world to deal with. So, for example, for those who take Mussolini as a role model, which a lot of people do, so in the Soviet Union, for example, and all Italy and all these countries, they would take bloodbaths as role models, or those who take Hitler as a role model in Germany. I can't use Hitler as a role model to a time and space, and what he did was bad. With the Ahl Bayt alayhi salam, and especially Ali al-Akbar alayhi salam, for the youth, if I tell the story of Ali al-Akbar to anyone, mm-hmm. Muslim or non-Muslim, they will get moved by it.
They'll celebrate him as a value.
Exactly. They will see that these values are not something limited to a Muslim. So when we see
Imam, and they're not like, they're not relative.
Exactly. So I always say this. For example, when you look at Karbala, we say it's a university, right? It truly is. In terms of racism, did Imam al-Hussein differentiate between his black fighters and his
brothers?
No, actually, on the contrary, he comes to the slave, he puts his cheek on his cheek, mm-hmm. and he would recite something. He goes to his Ali al-Akbar and he would do the exact same thing. Mm. So he did not differentiate. So racism did not exist. Racism is something that me and you are suffering with today in the 21st century, and we're still having that racism problem. Mm-hmm. So in any way I look at the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam and Ali al-Akbar alayhi as-salam specifically because we are celebrating his birthday and he's a role model to youth. Any human being, any youth, if they put the effort into looking into his life, they would gain and come up with something that mm-hmm. they could use in their own life.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can listen to us at parstoday.com/en.
Question that I have, Sayyidina, is that, the thing about Ali al-Akbar is that the highlight, really, the climax of his achievement was in Karbala, right? Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like a narrow field for us to explore, It's literally just a battlefield. And I'm wondering whether there are things that he did or said during the Battle of Karbala that we can take as life lessons, or are there things, events that took place prior to Karbala throughout the course of Ali al-Akbar's life that we can, connect with and sort of apply into our own lives?
Well, any person or any human being, at the end of the day, when the end or their life comes to end, is that we see that they live to the core values that they adhere to during their life? Or was it the end different? A lot of people, they have a moral code when they do things in life, but once, you know, as they get close to their death, they change and they deviate and they do things opposite to the things that they were preaching themselves.
Mm-hmm.
With Ali Akbar alayhi salam, when he ended his life, what did he end it with? Did he stood up to the values that he lived by all his life or not? And we can see that in Karbala, Ali Akbar alayhi salam, he presented himself in a way where it's simple if we look at it, even though it was a very short battle
mm-hmm.
and ended very quickly. But Ali Akbar alayhi salam stood for many things. Amongst the things that we can relate to today, he stood against oppression and against slavery and against people, their minds being overtaken and people being brainwashed. And all these things that Yazid and his army were trying to push into people, which is something that we live today. We're under the subconsciously, we are under the control of the media or under Hollywood or those who are oppressors or governments. These were the exact same things that Yazid was doing in his time. Ali al-Akbar, in the battlefield, he stood against these things, which is, you know, we can relate to today. When he fought and gave his life, whether he said something or not, just him saying, I will not accept oppression. I will not accept anyone depriving me my free will and the free of thought and the free to live as a free person. I will not stand to that. I will fight for it until the last drop of blood I have. So that's something that Ali Akbar alayhi salam lived for. He fought for that cause. He fought for the freedom of mankind. It doesn't matter what the faith is. If you want, you know, like how Gandhi said, I learned from Hussein to be an oppressed and succeed.
Victorious,
he looked at him from that aspect. You know, he looked at him from an aspect that, you know, he fought oppression, not he fought Yazid, who's against his grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
He did not look at it as a religious thing. He looked at it as a value for humanity. Mm-hmm. Ali Akbar alayhi salam, he stood there. In terms of faith, he fought for his faith. In terms of his imamah, he fought for the imam of his time. He had to give up his life for the imam of his time, which is his father. In terms of saving, Islam, he did his part. In terms of saving the core values of humanity, be it freedom, be it justice, be it equality, be it fairness, all these things, Ali Akbar alayhi salam fought for. And that's why when we celebrate his birthday or his martyrdom, these are the concepts that we are celebrating in reality. Whether it's him, his father, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, or all the brave heroes who fell in Karbala, they fought for these concepts.
Mm-hmm. So they basically fought for every single value available during their time and those that would prevail the tests of time and become universal. Of course, there's so much more to say about this. Thanks for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because of you. In weakness I am braver. My defender and my savior, my giver and my taker, abiding in silence with patience and guidance. Aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness. And my love is strong.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastorday.com/en. And now, you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.